Keeping our sense of humor is essential, an essential tool that we try to remember to pull out at those times when we simply feel overwhelmed by circumstances beyond our control. But it has become harder of late to make lighthearted humor out of our current extended disaster season, one that has been labeled by the experts as being hyperactive. So if you have been feeling that this year's weather season is much worse than usual, you are not just being hypersensitive. It is not your imagination. That's because this disaster season swirling about us these days is indeed the single most destructive season on record, with its heavy mix of hurricanes, earthquakes, wildfires, mudslides, and of course, massive snowstorms, cold snowstorms. And then there is the political chaos in the world, its mix of terrorism, refugee crises, threats of nuclear war, and a legislative war of words and egos, all having consequences that are devastating, especially to the lives of those most vulnerable among us. To say that many of us are being pushed regularly outside of our comfort zones these days is an understatement. The idea that all of this, both natural and political disasters, might be a new normal is simply too overwhelming to take in all at once. I thought about making a variation on that bumper sticker you've probably seen, the one that says, if you're not outraged, you're not paying attention. Mine would say, if you're not disturbed, you're not paying attention. Last summer at our UU General Assembly in New Orleans, I heard about a new book by an award-winning journalist, Naomi Klein, called No Is Not Enough. I was familiar with her book from 10 years before called The Shock Doctrine, The Rise of Disaster Capitalism, where she provided extensive evidence of a new global trend where corporate opportunists sweep into regions that have suffered either from a natural disaster or a political and economic one. Last August, little did I know, when I had just finished reading Naomi Klein's newest book, No Is Not Enough, and was anxious to talk with my fellow UUs about it, that the disaster season that she was predicting, both natural and human-made, would be in full force before I even got the chance to talk with my fellow UUs. In my hometown of sunny Pensacola, Florida, we dodged two major bullets in this historic hurricane season, while many of our neighbors on both sides of us were not so fortunate. And now that these winter storms have arrived, we've been getting hit by them too, in unprecedented ways. A couple of days ago, the wind chill in Pensacola was 11 degrees. That does not happen very often. Naomi Klein wasn't able to predict our current disaster season because of any psychic ability or meteorological aptitude, but rather the patterns she had been immersed in for the past few decades as she reported from disaster zones from around the world. For example, in her earlier book, The Shock Doctrine, she made an historical investigation that looked at Chile after Pinochet's coup, Russia after the collapse of the Soviet Union, and then with more closer ties to Americans, the U.S. so-called shock and awe attack of Baghdad, and what happened in New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina. The term shock doctrine is picked up again in her new book, No Is Not Enough, which was written in the early months of the current administration in Washington. Klein describes the shock doctrine as a systematic tactic that capitalizes on the disorientation of the public in the wake of a collective shock, whether it is a war, a coup, a terrorist attack, a market crash, or a natural disaster. The shock doctrine is an intentional strategy used by profiteers to push through radical pro-corporate measures that some of them actually call shock therapy because they truly believe it is good for the economy. So what does this have to do with the current administration? Well, the president and his cabinet of billionaires and multimillionaires are unashamed disaster capitalists. Their underlying goals of dismantling the public sphere and government while openly challenging the public interest may appear somewhat chaotic, but they are actually following a kind of shock doctrine script. I guess I should have offered a trigger warning for political content before I got to this point. And this is political content, but fundamentally it is a nonpartisan issue of great moral concern, not just for us as Americans, but for the whole world as well. While I have to confess that reading Naomi Klein's book, the first three quarters of it, no, is not enough, it just got progressively more and more depressing. But when I got to the last quarter of the book, I was not just pleasantly surprised, I was amazingly surprised. For me, it was a game changer. What Klein offers in the last section of her book is a practical section that she calls How Things Could Get Better. For a while now, I've been saying, along with a lot of others who have been busy documenting our American history, especially 50 years ago during the turbulent 60s, that we are in smack dab another turbulent era that has the potential for just as much social change and perhaps progress as we were back then. And I have to tell you that what I see happening in our country and around the world right now actually has the potential of even having a greater seismic shift in human consciousness and in our societies than what we saw in the 1960s. That's a bold statement. But I'll tell you the main reason why. Global warming, along with the amassing of power in a wealthy elite, has been happening for a long time. But what we are seeing now in both of these arenas are signs that the citizens of the world are no longer able not to notice, nor are we as comfortable remaining unresponsive to these huge dynamics that we are facing. The climate changes that we have just begun to experience just might mobilize the people to unite on behalf of the public global good and challenge the powers that be in new and innovative ways. We have to understand, in Klein's words, that no is not enough means it's not enough for us to resist the rollback of hard-won human rights and policies that blatantly brutalize the most vulnerable among us. We have to start building a new way, a way that reclaims democratic values and through democratic processes creates an alternative vision for the future of humanity and the fate of this planet that we call home. A future that is very different from the vision that the shock doctors are spinning. How do we do this? Well, Frances Moore LePay, in her new book, which is one of our UUA common reads, suggests that we do it by engaging with a daring democracy. Klein is saying the same thing, and she phrases it a little bit differently. She talks about the need for ongoing collaboration for a people's platform that is fundamentally based in nonpartisan politics, but radically engaging with our local and national processes in order to transform them. As the world continues to gain momentum on its crash course with coming disasters, it is not enough to say no to bad ideas or irresponsible leaders. We still have to defend those hard-won policy battles that have expanded social rights, but even that is not enough. We have to recognize the strategies of a systemic backlash against the social and political movements of recent decades that we're experiencing now and help to build a counter-movement grounded in an ethic of social inclusion and care for our rapidly changing planet. The urgency of climate change and the realistic prediction of more natural disasters to come means that now is the time for a strategic, economic, and social overhaul. And if our leaders are not motivated to do it on our behalf, then it is up to us to create this people's platform to get it done for the sake of our planet and for the generations to come. The flip side of a shock strategy that capitalizes on most people's responses to disaster by taking advantage of them is instead this basic human response for us to help each other through whatever disaster befalls us. We can decide not to fall for the disorienting tactics and instead start moving forward with a new enthusiasm for creative activism, fueled by our love for humanity and for our beautiful planet. Rather than give in to a divide and conquer mentality that fuels fear and division among us, we can, if we choose, go about making new alliances with our fellow humans. What a novel idea. If we are to mobilize on behalf of ourselves, the planet, and future generations, Klein and others are pointing out what may be painfully obvious to some of us. The hardest challenge to overcome is simply the task of coming together and deciding to work together. We have to find ways in which we can connect with each other rather than constantly competing to advance our own dearly held cause if we are able to rise to this historical moment that merits transformative thinking and action. Any small acts that we can take of coming together to affirm our common humanity, despite differences in our backgrounds, and even failed previous collaborations and broken trust, we are building capacity for a new coalition in the midst of an atmosphere of fear and division. We have to get creative to find ways not to play into that divide and conquer tactic that is all around us. This work may indeed be the hardest way we can choose to respond to the coming storm, but it also offers the greatest hope and our most pressing task. How do we craft a compelling vision for the future that can be supported on multiple fronts with intersectional agendas? A vision that is inspiring, but also has some concrete solutions for the multiple crises that we are facing in our times. Journalist Naomi Klein has dual citizenship, both in the US and in Canada. And she talks about how in 2015, she had a truly inspiring experience of creative activism in the face of great odds when she participated in a dialogue summit in Canada that was called to address the collapse of oil prices there and the consequences that many communities were being pushed to their breaking points. And that's a phenomenon that we see in lots of communities these days. The summit led to a creative question. What if energy industries were owned and controlled democratically? The summit dialogue led to a collaboratively crafted document that they called the LEAP Manifesto, a call for Canada based on caring for the earth and for each other. And the idea of the word, using the word leap, is taking a leap of faith really into the kind of future that we want. It's where the crises at hand, it's not enough to kind of hammer things out step by step. You have to look ahead and be willing to take a leap of faith. The document states that the scale of their plan matches the scale of the crisis, a set of demands that actually acknowledge how much and how fast we need to change. And it rings true because it sees the climate crisis not as a technical problem to be solved by engineers, but a crisis of a system and an economic philosophy, a root cause of extractivism and ever-increasing consumption. Not only did the summit produce a comprehensive plan, they consulted a team of economists to ask if the math was feasible, and what they learned was, yes, we actually can afford to save ourselves. When energy is generated and owned as a public domain, not only can it create hundreds and thousands of green energy jobs, the revenues can go to support public services that benefit the whole community. The model has already been embraced in Denmark way back in the 1980s and on a large scale in Germany with immense and rapid benefits. This kind of creative visioning is also happening in the United States, like a network called Climate Justice Alliance that advocates for green energy jobs in low-income communities that have been harshly affected by both pollution and neglect. These communities, largely indigenous, migrant, and communities of colors, are at the top of the list for rapid green energy transition with this democratic model that supports a justice-based economy with the idea of philosophy, no worker left behind. The idea is to generate a large number of well-paying, low-carbon-producing jobs that invigorate democracy from the ground up. Not only does this kind of creative visioning heal our relationship with the earth, it addresses some deep social wounds that have been caused by the historical injustices that came along with European expansion through colonization. One insight that I find especially hopeful is that we don't necessarily have to get everyone mobilized on the same page in order to make a major evolutionary leap forward. Like Margaret Mead is known to have said, never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can indeed change the world. It's the only thing that ever has. The other inspiring thing that both Naomi Klein and Frances Moore LePay have found in their research with grassroots community organizing efforts is that courage is contagious. So have you heard this one about the teenager who comes home from school one afternoon and asks his mom, "What's the difference between ignorance and apathy?" The mom heads to Google to look up the textbook definitions, and the teenager starts laughing out loud, "I don't know and I don't care." It's time for us to wake up to what's happening in our world today, not to shut down with being overwhelmingly despairing while our hearts are breaking and our heads are hurting. It's time to take our sadness, our anger, and even our sense of powerlessness to see what we can do to make a difference, because actually we can do a lot, even when it doesn't seem like it. It's happening. People are coming together and showing up for each other in record numbers. With the second annual Women's March across the country and around the world yesterday, we're seeing it. even though we are living in a disaster season, with the potential for even more shock therapy looming on the horizon, there's hope. We do need to kind of hunker down, batten down the hatches, and learn everything we know to weather the storm. And we need to learn everything we can about how we got to this place so that we can truly come together to build a new way, a way that doesn't reward greed, but rather succeeds on the strength of genuine caring for the human family that shares this precious planet. It's time for each of us to find how we can, by working with others, become beacons in the coming storm. May it be so.